First of all, I would like to say if you had any problem with your luggage in your last travel, I cannot do anything with that, as I'm not here to solve any problem. Just to give you a bit of a background, I'm working in the OR department at Air Canada, and we are kind of an internal consultant in the company, working on different problems, revenue management being one, but we're also involved in crew planning problems, finance, some operations, and all kinds of problems like that. The other thing is, I would like to invite you to ask any questions during my talk. If you want to clarify something, feel free to ask questions as I'm talking about. Here's the agenda of what I would like to cover. Is in fact there's a link with what Gilles proposed. And in fact, I would like to bring you to my last point, which is the link with the bi-level programming. But first, I would like to go over some terminology, some major component of revenue management. What is revenue management for the airline industry? Some classical models, and spend half of my time on the link between or what we did so far with Gilles' team in terms of bi-level programming and the application in the airline industry. Okay? So here's some first terminology in the airline industry. The first one is a leg. A leg is more really the operational view of the smallest portion of a flight. Operational perspective meaning that it's really a flight where there's no stopover. That's the idea, and really that's how the operation is working. A flight can be a sequence of many legs. So flight 100 leaving Montreal to Vancouver but having a stopover in Toronto would have two legs, but it would be one flight. A flight segment is really where the commercial perspective is. So meaning that for a passenger, even if I'm taking the flight 100 from Montreal to Vancouver, there would be three possible segments. A passenger can do Montreal-Toronto, he can do Montreal-Vancouver, and he could do Toronto-Vancouver. But if someone is at the airport in Montreal and he's, even though flight 100 stops in Toronto, his final destination is Vancouver, on the ticket it's going to be shown Montreal-Vancouver. So it's really the perspective of the passenger. Flight segment related to the same flight number. The OND stands for origin destination. It's really the ultimate commercial perspective of a passenger. So really where he starts his day and where he ends his day. And there could be different things like OND within Air Canada, OND really including the partners and everything. Someone can start his travel in Montreal and his travel in South Africa. But the OND is a sequence of flight segments. So that's the idea. So that's why I'm calling it the ultimate perspective of a passenger. One thing that you should note is all the prices are established by origin destination, right? Montreal, Vancouver, if you're taking a direct flight, or most of the time, if you're taking, even though you're having a stopover or anything, it's the same price. Sometimes there could be, it could depend on the way you go from the origin to the destination, but most of the time it's one price. ODF, it's really something I'm going to talk a little bit about that. It's simply an origin destination fare. So it's a group of fare from origin destination. It's a origin destination class, if you want. Class of passenger, fare of a group of things. Any questions so far? Fine. here's my my view of revenue management. Many people are talking about revenue management as being the seat allocation problem that Gilles was referring to, meaning how many seats should I sell at, let's say, for that class. That's what many people are referring to revenue management or yield management. I'm talking about revenue management as being more these three components: pricing, finding the right price, the optimal price for an origin destination, the seat allocation, how many seats should I sell, and the scheduling, the fleet assignment, which is which aircraft should be at a specific place. And there's many interaction between these three things. And in fact, over the years, this problem, yield management, has been addressed quite extensively by many different models, scheduling as well, but pricing is really was left over or in the last few years because of the complexity of the problems and everything. Yeah. Pricing is the setting of the price. Seat allocation is how many seats should I keep for at that price, let's say, to sell. Right? Take a very simple example. In an aircraft, you have two cabins, right? You have the business cabin and the back cabin. Let's say there's only one price. No, that's not a good example. Let's say in the back cabin, I have 100 seats, two classes of passengers, one being paying $200, one paying $50. So the yield management problem is how many of these 100 seats should I keep for the class who would pay $200, and how many seats should I keep for the passenger who will pay $50 on these 100 seats. The pricing problem is the $200. Is it the right price, or could I increase it to $250, $300, $350, $400? See the difference? It's okay. There is a tight connection. In fact, historically, the other thing is this problem has been solved with a fixed price as an input. Okay? And that's where I wanted to go, is in fact, as I was mentioning, these two problems have been addressed over the years. This one, not really, but people are starting to work in trying to solve jointly either the seat allocation and the scheduling, or the scheduling and the pricing, or the pricing and the seat allocation together. That's how they try to approach it. And in fact, as you will see, what Gilles' team proposed, it's a very interesting model, because it is in fact solving both the pricing and the seat allocation simultaneously. That's the interesting part. So let's okay. So I'm gonna. This is a quick description of the three process that I just showed you. The pricing and take attention on the objective of each of these process. So the pricing is to establish the price of each product to optimize revenues. Pricing problem is extremely complex, and the difficulty is more in the amount of information that you need to consider. That's one thing. The other thing is technically it was quite challenging. And the other thing is, for pricing, usually if you want to do a good job, you need competitor information, which airlines were really struggling in the last few years. Now there's way to get this competitor information, but we were quite struggling with that. I guess this is a thing that has been discussed over the last few years. many people believe that pricing is the next big step in revenue management, meaning that if we can provide the pricing analyst with a decision tool, that would really contribute to increase the revenue of an airline company, as yield management or seat allocation did a couple of years ago, 15, 20 years ago. That's the idea. So this is the process, the first thing. The second one is scheduling. The objective is to assign the right aircraft on each leg of the network, a leg, right? It's the operational perspective, to again optimize the revenue. And that's why I put the three process under the umbrella of revenue management, because revenue management is really to manage your revenue and hopefully optimize them, maximize them. Scheduling is really something that has been addressed by many different companies over the years, and it gives really good results. The only thing is it relies on a very good forecast. In theory, either airlines or vendors claim that they have a very good origin destination forecast, but in reality, many airlines, most of the airlines, are still using a forecast at the leg level. Second process. Third one, last one, is the seat allocation. Like I said, the seat allocation is really to establish how many seats should I allocate, or should an airline allocate, in each class of service, each product. Think about Air Canada. Air Canada has Tango, Tango Plus, Latitude, and I guess there's a business fare, the business class. But there's these three products. Forget about the potential subclasses, but how many of these three products should I allocate, or should I be willing to sell on, let's say, a 100-seat aircraft at each time? So that's the idea behind the seat allocation. This function has three sub-functions: forecast, optimization, and inventory control. I'll go in more detail in a second. The overbooking that we were talking about earlier is part of the optimization. It's one thing that the optimization should give you the optimal allocation, and at the same time, how many seats are you willing to risk to oversell, because there's a risk of all the people being at the gate. And the other thing I was saying, typically for the seat allocation problem, the fares for the first process and the schedule or the capacity from the scheduling are input to the seat allocation problem. So just that's a nice way to remember that eventually, if we could solve these three processes altogether, everything is a variable, meaning the fleet. This is a bit more complicated, but not that much. I'm not talking about having a new type of aircraft. It's a question of working with the fleet that I've got, and where should I assign this fleet? That's the idea. But if we could solve all these three altogether, it would be absolutely fantastic. And as I said, we're trying to address two of them right now. That's the challenge. Any questions? Tu veux rajouter des choses, Gilles? Tu me diras, hein? J'ai des affaires que tu veux acheter. Okay, what's the benefit of revenue management? Well, usually the people are talking about 4 to 6% of increased revenue, mostly due to overbooking and seat mix. Seat mix is the allocation, how many seats of each product would I keep. The interesting thing of revenue management is a way to put seats, or making sure that your low value seats are, or low demand are on flight where you have a lot of capacity, where your capacity is much greater than your demand. And usually if you're doing a good job, you're going to keep your high value customer or your flight where you have a lot of demand and not really as much as capacity, like the Friday afternoon flight from Toronto to Montreal. Most of the time, the fare will be more expensive than the 2 o'clock because there's a lot of demand for business passenger. So that's the idea of matching capacity and demand here. So that's the idea of revenue management. And the, one of the goals of revenue management is also to prevent any revenue dilution as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Each day. Each day, each class, each flight for the next 365 days. So think about it's a couple of million each day. But we're currently doing it in a simple way. Okay. Here's the a plan of a third generation revenue management application. And don't ask me why it's the third, because I have no clue what was the first and the second one, but that's the third. I know that's the third, but I don't know what was the first one and the second one. This is how most of the airline companies, if not all, are currently working. That's the idea of running a revenue management shop in an airline company. You have the optimization model, which the input is, in fact, all the recommendation, the output of the optimization model is all the recommendation of each class flight, departure flight of in the future, how many seats would be allocated in each class. Again, think about, I'm talking about RM, but I should have said seat allocation problem, because in this kind of thing, the fare and the schedules are input to the problem. So the capacity and the fares are input. So you have the optimization model and the overbooking model, which is, in fact, most of the time included in the optimization model. But the overbooking model will, in some cases where you're willing to take some risk, will increase your allocation. So you're willing to sell 105 seats in a 100-seat aircraft, because you know that usually in the last 10 weeks there was 10% no-show, let's say. So that's one way to see it. What is required for these two models is you need a forecasting model, and that's why in the seat allocation problem I was talking about the three parts. There's the forecasting, the optimization, and the inventory control. So you need a forecasting model to be able to forecast properly how many passengers should I expect for each class, each flight, each future day. And to build a good forecasting, you need historical information on reservation, future reservation, future flight reservation information, how many booking do I already have for, let's say, Toronto, Paris for next summer. That's an interesting information. And as I said, the revenue data is the fare information. That's another input to the optimization model. And show rate information is simply how many passengers usually are at the gate or did make a reservation or are not showing at the gate. That's a required information for the overbooking model. And the reason why I'm talking about that is to bring you at the end of this talk is really to showing you how the work we're currently doing with Gilles' team is really addressing all this. So it's really to give you an understanding of the RM in general. But this is more seat allocation. Any questions so far? Other questions? Here's what Gilles was talking about earlier, the EMSR, which stands for Expected Marginal Seat Revenue. This is something that has been developed in the mid-80s There's a guy at MIT named Peter Belobaba who made a lot of miles on that, I should say, because he really pushed the envelope and make it workable for an airline, this concept, which is simply using the fact that the demand is stochastic. It's never something that is fully known. I mean, you can expect something, but it's not always static. And so the idea is to work with a revenue of a specific class, a probability of this class, with the assumption that, let's say, passenger would follow a normal demand, with something that the demand would be that coming from your forecasting model. The standard deviation is something that you could derive from SAP. And the expected marginal seat is really to get a value of each passenger that you should expect in a specific class. And once this value, which is the last seat of that class, is less than the fare of the lowest class or the next lowest class, you should not protect for that, because the value is not something that is worth. J'avais un exemple. Okay, let's look at this example. Okay, so let's take a simple example. You have four classes. This is the demand 10, 15, 20, 30 with a standard deviation. You have the fares related to these four classes. And you need, the goal is to find the optimal protection for the first class, Y, where this value here, the MSR for the Y class, is higher than the fare of the B class, 700. You could make the computation if you want, but the value is 8. So this means that you're going to protect 8 seats for the Y class only. So you're going to say, I should be able to sell 8 seats at $1,000. So I'm going to make sure that I'm keeping at least 8 seats for this customer. And so the next, so there's a concept in the airline industry also with the nested allocation. So you're going to, even though you're going to keep 8 seats for the Y, you want to make sure that if your demand for the Y class is greater than 8, you want always to offer seats for your highest value customer, right? I mean, if let's say 50 passengers come to your place and they're willing to pay $1,000, you won't refuse them pretending that you have only 8 seats. You're going to sell it to them. So there's where the concept of nested allocation comes from. So on your Y class, you're going to be willing to sell your 100 seats to your customer at paying $1,000. And the next allocation, so that's why I'm saying I'm going to protect 8 seats to the B class and lower, because I'm saying that the allocation at B is 92. I'm willing to sell 92 seats to B class and lower value than my B class. So the difference between the 100 and the 92 is the difference between the allocation of Y and B, meaning that I'm keeping 8 seats to Y only, but if there's more, that's fine. That's the idea. And if you want to make the computation, you could find that the next one is 14, so making, in fact, the allocation of M at 92 minus 14, which is 78, and so on and so on. That's the idea. Yes? There is. Is it always working? No, but there is, yes. Let's look at some of the assumptions. Let's look at the assumptions. But in fact, you're right. But sometimes the theory is the assumption of the theory is not there. But in reality, you could assume a few things that would give you interesting results. And that's the idea here, I guess. See?
I can see that from everything the effect and so on, and it is a better feeling of the class and so on. But what bothers me is that you say eight, and usually you need a lot more in the sum than eight to get the normal behavior. Like what we teach our students is that you take the sum of 30 variables to get to the normal distribution.
Ça, tu as quelque chose à répondre à ça, ça? Here's what we were discussing. Here's the assumption that we're talking about. Yes, the domain of each class is separated and independent. You could argue about that, especially in today's conditions. Conditions attached to each class historically were preventing dilutions. You were able to buy, let's say, a low fare only 21 days prior to departure. At 20 days, you were unable to buy. It's not true anymore, but that was the assumption that they were taking at that time, right? The demand of each class is stochastic and can be forecasted with the history. So that's one thing we need to work with. And the other, the last assumption, I guess, where we could argue these days is the lowest class will fill first and the second after. So once the lowest class is filled, you're going to address. But the reality is not really like that. Today's it's more like that, but at that time it was not really. But at least it gave an interesting result, because we one of the reasons we used it. Okay, so I'm just saying that the basic EMSR, which is called EMSR-A, is really what I showed you, but you could improve the model with working with joint domain of classes. The name was given with EMSR-D. You could incorporate price elasticity between classes, so to encourage passenger to buy higher fare. That's interesting in theory, but the thing is to set these price elasticity value is something really, really difficult. And on overbooking, I guess to come back to this topic, the objective is really to minimize the cost of spoiled seats and denied boarding costs, because your airlines are giving back money to passengers who, in fact, were denied boarding on a specific aircraft. So the risk, really, the objective really here is to find the value where you're going to minimize both cases, because at the same time, you could be quite conservative, but many aircraft will leave with empty seats that you could have sold. So that's the idea. And right now, the models that are only considering tangible costs, something that you would call the piss-off factor, is never included in that. Never. Yes? I guess I would say yes, and in fact, from what I guess this is exactly what Jill presented in a few slides I'll show you the model of the bi-level programming, but that's the idea of it's quite close to a game theory. You want to add something on that? No, that's fine. Well, we'll go there, and if you want to still ask questions. So what are the limitations of this kind of model? Well, the problem we're facing is the optimization is made only on one flight by flight. So when there's hourly a flight each hour between Montreal and Toronto, these flights are currently considered separate from each other, which does not make sense. The fare conditions are almost not there anymore. The 21 that you had to make before to purchase a specific fare is not there anymore, specifically since the introduction of low fare carriers. Like, they pushed the airlines industry to work with them. And the other thing is the competitor information being available to the customer pushed us to have a much more sophisticated model, meaning models that will take into consideration the competition. Okay. About inventory control. Remember I told you there was three steps in seat allocation. There's testing, there's the optimization, and in fact there's inventory control. Optimization, establish the number of seats that you should sell for each product, flight on each departure. But in fact there's also another thing that you could add on top of to control your inventory. You could in find ways to modify the availability of when at time of request. When someone is requesting a flight, you could find a way to say, I'll accept or not, depending on different concept, economy, in fact. This is think about pick flights between Montreal and Toronto. You could decide to if there's a connection passenger, you could give more availability to this passenger coming from Europe than a local passenger, because this passenger will contribute much more to the network, to the overall revenue of your company. So that's how you could control entry. And that's how I'm thinking. This is the third step of what the problem is. In fact, we are working with what we call bid process at Canada, where in fact, exactly the example I gave you, depending if it's a connecting passenger, if the bid prices are high enough, we'll give him the seat, even though locally one of the two legs is open to sell in the product that he's looking for. The reason why I'm talking about that is because I would like to give you the output of the model is going to be a good feed for that. The thing is a few words about leg and OND. You might, if you're reading about revenue management in the industry, you're going to see that the 80s, early 90s, we're talking about everything related to leg basis. More and more, there's things that are developed through the OND. So that's the natural of everything that's been done so far, OND forecast versus leg forecast and everything. So that's the only point I'll make here. I'd like to jump I'm not supposed to. Is it okay? It was okay? Should I try not to move too much? Can I help? here's the challenges that we're facing these days. Brings us to the, and what the that Gilles gave a brief overview minutes ago, and what I just showed you, the way the traditional the classes were, the segmentation was not working anymore. Class and fair product, and the simple reason, all the products are mostly available on the departure of the competitor information. I did that the competitor information not included, but to be included in. So that's the other thing. And the other thing, one very interesting is what you it brings us to what you pricing and the CETA problem are not distinct. They were never distinct. More and yes, were at the they need to be considered or solved. Something you want to do? Okay. Should I stop? Sorry. Okay. So that's what Gilles showed you. In fact, I won't go into the details of everything because we already went to that. What I would like to do is show you how this is a rich model for the airline industry and what can be done with that. Again, you have two levels. The first one is the carrier who seeks to maximize its revenue, and the second level is the customer wants to minimize his disutility. So that's the idea with the optimization and the choice model at the second level. So let's look at let's get some details about that. Yeah, in the last 20 years, like I told you many times, there was a lot of interesting solutions that have been developed for the yield management part, the seat allocation part. But by necessity, because pricing analyst needs a tool as well, and because technologically it was more possible, the pricing problem has been studied extensively since the beginning of 2000. There was many trials with the airlines, with the vendors, and even the academic as well. This point is really important. This is why it's so interesting for us. There's three things that can be used, the model can be used for. The pricing problem itself, meaning having the allocation as the input, so completely the reverse as what I was saying. Let's solve the pricing problem with the allocation as the input to really, so prices become the decision variables to really optimize the prices. So am I at an optimal value or prices on each or a specific OD, let's say. The second one is we could even solve the traditional seat allocation problem, but with a much richer model because of the choice model. And that's exactly what SNCF did, in fact. They went with the second thing where they tried to solve the seat allocation. But most importantly, is this is the good, the third reason why it's so interesting. It's going to bring us to finally, get a potential solution to jointly solve the pricing and the seat allocation problem. That's the most interesting thing. And I guess Gilles gave you a few words about that, but the models clearly reflect the natural process of a pricing to an airline industry. And I'm back to, I guess, so back to this this thing that or this slide where I showed you the different process. Again, I'm just saying that we're trying to solve these two at the top, these two processes. Okay. I'm almost, I'll be on time. OTP, like Air Canada, right? Right on time, 7 o'clock. Okay. It's so important for us. Okay, what did we do at Air Canada so far? The interesting, what we called phase one internally, we did a prototype last year, or last fall, I guess, where we tried to solve the strategic pricing problem. The strategic pricing problem is you have to fix or set fares for a season. So what would be the fare between Toronto and Halifax, let's say, for this fall for this product? The tactical pricing is really on a daily basis if you need to react to competitor like WestJet or a company like that, or even U.S. carrier if you're in the U.S. market. So that was the idea of the exercise that we did last fall. So it's really to get the optimal fares against the competitor, but even against ourselves, the Air Canada. So that brings me to the next slide, where, in fact, this is a screenshot of the Air Canada website, where you have, let's say, a choice between Montreal and Toronto, I think. I'm not sure. Yeah, Montreal, Toronto. And you have a couple of choice, and you have different product. So what we call the buy-up is really different fares that you would have because of the difference in the time of the day. So depending on your demand, you're going to put a 69 or a 125 because you have more demand for your Tango product. Same product, but different prices. The buy-across is really what would be the price or the fare increase between different products? And we work with Gilles' team to look at both the buy-up value and the buy-across value between these different products last fall. And in fact, what is there in the domestic market, in fact, comes from their study. Currently, yeah. Yeah?
Something curious there.
Yeah?
If you look at the last two rows, your Tango.
It's funny, eh?
Always the bottom row.
Yeah.
That's a curious one.
It might be, but this might reflect that on this flight, on the 8 o'clock flight, because the Tango Plus is more towards business passenger. Business passenger would not buy Tango most of the time. So that would probably mean that on this flight, you're expecting much more business passenger with Tango Plus, because the product, the attributes of the product, in fact, is really what you want. So this is not what you would expect, but sometimes that's the end result. To optimize the revenue, that's what you need to get. So yeah, for a business passenger, he would certainly buy this one for sure. So at 8 o'clock, I'm really expecting that's the reason why you would get that. The other thing we did is we even look at scenarios where we would where the competition would match our fares or they would not match our fare. So to get to eventually, I guess that's back to the game theory that you're talking about, to eventually get to a point of a neutral point of price. One of the reasons why this exercise is interesting for us as well, because the current direction that we're having from the exec is to push for high load factor. Air Canada has much higher load factor. It's around between 85 and 90%. 3 years ago, it was in the low 70s. So it's really different. So what kind of levers do you have to increase revenue? Well, one of them is to optimize the price, to see if you can increase the prices properly, to get more money from your pocket. So that's the idea. And, yeah. The load factor is how many seats, when the aircraft leaves, how many seats are still open, or not open, in fact. So it's 90%. But it's a difference. In the airline business, it's called RSM under ASM. RSM is revenue seat miles. So how many passengers times the distance divided by available seat mile. So that's a measure of load factor, but it's mostly the same thing. The other interesting thing, and that's why I wanted to talk about bid prices, this model is also interesting because it's a good feeder for bid prices that would make more sense than the one we're currently computing. So this is why it's quite interesting, because it takes into account the network topology. And the interesting thing is, as I was telling you, there's the forecast, the optimization, and the control inventory. We could even, with that model, improve the control, the way we control the inventory today. So that's another reason why it's interesting. Yes? Not a lot, less than 2%. Not, you mean the wholesalers and things like that?
Well, I mean like Imperial Oil or.
No. It's almost nothing compared to others. Oh no. It's no. That's not where the. Okay. The other thing I want to give you is just a quick overview of other things that we're looking for and we wish to look for. Gilles was talking about the number of points that you would get. This is, again, on the website, the definition of each product, what you could expect to get depending on each product. So you're going to... Sorry, there's a part of my screen that is cut, but if you want to have, if you want to be able to do a same-day standby, so meaning if you want to go to an earlier flight without any fee, you need to buy a Latitude fare, a Latitude product. If you want a refundable ticket, you need to buy a Latitude product. And the idea is to eventually, that's the other why the model is so rich. These value to one, some of these attributes, same day airport changes, there's a couple of things, there's even the coffee and everything. We could even look at how to price these things. So that's why this model is quite rich. Here's an interesting one of the final slides. This is a way to look at the different things that we're looking at, mostly in revenue management. But this is where these things are between static and dynamic and between strategic and tactical. The thing that I was just talking about is the attribute metric optimization. How would you price these attributes? The strategic pricing that I was talking about that we did last fall, that's here. And the daily reaction that you need, if each day you need to react to competitor information, to new fares, to sales and everything, that would be something on that side, meaning much more dynamic and much more tactical. But that's to give you a kind of idea of a different process. Customer segmentation is really where it's the corresponding to the second level that we're talking in the model. So that leads me to the last three slides, which is interesting. I found them interesting. This was done by Jean-Philippe, who works with Gilles. And I guess this is an interesting way to understand graphically how different the problem would be solved and how different the problem is today. This is how the classical model was addressing the revenue management. Each box of each color corresponds to a different product, let's say. And as you can see, the prices is fixed during the time. So the idea of this one is really to find the optimal allocation that you would put to each of these boxes, but the prices being an input and equal in the time. The second model is the low fare. The low fare is only working with one product. They have only one product. That's the main difference between WestJet and Air Canada. So the only thing they would work with is on the prices. They would have a different prices, and as you come close to the flight departure, the prices will increase. Even the low fare are working like that. And here's the interesting thing. That's where we want to go, we want to be, is eventually having different product in the time and with potentially different prices, like the low fare company, the airlines would do, but having the flexibility not only to work with different seat allocation, which is the y-axis, but also with the prices that you would set to get the optimal revenue. So this is, I guess, the a nice way to see the joint optimization problem that you're trying to solve. On these three things, I guess the booking horizon, the number of seats that you would preserve for each class, and the prices. And I guess that's it for me. I'm 5 minutes late. I'm sorry. Merci.